I love this game.
I love it.
I really love this game.
I love it. I love it.
I love this game.
I love it.
I really love this game.
Yeah, NBA Australia, how are you going? How are you going? I hope you're right. You should be, because it's Tuesday, May 21, and you've got a surprise NBA Australia. Surprise! Hello! That's right, I'm your host, James Clements. You can also see my ugly mug on Fox Sports Lab NBA, the official AFL Supercoach podcast, and the AFL Today Show, all the good stuff. Bringing you a surprise show, because all the work stuff that they had planned for today, a full day turned into 1 hour. So that's this afternoon. So actually had the morning free, which is just as well because the squid was sick again. Had to look after him all morning. So what we are going to do instead is just do a really fun short show, preview the conference finals properly, which is what they deserve. I'll tell you what, we'll go through every sort of position group, the strengths and the weaknesses, all that sort of good gear. And then we'll bring on a hero of mine. That's right. NBL champ. Now Olympian, as he's more than happy to tell you, and Ballarat legend. That's right. My man, just a tiny little gym up there in the stadium there, the Minor Dome in Ballarat, freezing cold Ballarat winters, watching the one and only Damon Lowry. So that's pretty funny. He's jumping on for a quick chat, and it's awesome. Seriously, we're just digging into everything. NBL gear, what it was like being sort of an import, playing like random the next tier down from NBL, making the NBL, winning an NBL title. It's really good, so you'll enjoy that, trust me. And we'll just randomly, very briefly at the end, go back over the picks for tomorrow's game, which will be Celtics Pacers. So pretty fun show. Strap in, enjoy, because this is episode 1101, that's right, of NBA Australia. Oh, let's go.
G'day, this is Andrew Gaze, and you're listening and watching NBA Australia.
Watch out for the Shaq attack.
Well, you better. All of the Ant-Man attack if you're Charles Barkley. I ain't ever been in Minnesota in 20 years. Bring your ass. Love that. Get him, Ant-Man. I love this. Let's start really quickly today with the daily whip around. Because we've actually got the all-rookie teams are announced. And yes, our man, the Great Barrier Reef, doo-wop, bop-bop, doo-wop, shibba-dop-bop, doo-wop. Doo-wop Reef was robbed. Absolutely robbed. You got two votes. He was like the third best rookie center all season. Maybe the fourth. After Chet Wemby and Derek Lively, then we'd probably go with our man, doo-wop. Anyway, let's do it. So we'll have a look at those first teams and all that sort of good gear, because I believe in the first team, it's a pretty impressive one. You've got Chet Holmgren, Brandon Miller, not bad, Spindles Miller, Jaime Jaquez, and Brandon Podemski with Wemby, the unanimous choice rookie of the year, was also unanimously first team all rookie. The interesting one for the second team was that it's Derek Lively along with Amen Thompson, Keontae George, who was a weapon. Cason Wallace sneaks in there. And, of course, G.G. Jackson. He snuck in, G.G. Jackson, by one vote over Trace Jackson Davis of the Rockets as well. Not the Rockets, the bloody Warriors, what am I saying? So, ahead of that, you've got Orsar Thompson, Scoot Henderson. Bilal Coulibaly got 14 bloody votes. Grady Dick had 3. Duop had 2 second-place votes. What an absolute anti-Australian rort this is. You can't tell me that Bilal Coulibaly had a better year than our man. Doo-wop, bop-bop, doo. The undrafted two-way rookie who was basically outplayed DeAndre Ayton for most of the season. Grady Dick, whose entire season highlight was swapping jerseys with Anthony Black, who also got one vote. That was a better season than Duop Reef. Blow it out your ass, NBA. Bloody hell. That is horrible. These voters don't know their ass from their elbow. Give me a vote. I'll sort this out. Anyway, Duop was fantastic, but at the same time, like, Scoot Henderson getting one first place vote is the funniest vibe in the world, because that makes exactly zero sense for the second team votes, right? So he got one second team first place vote. You're taking the piss at this point. What are we doing? Pods as well. I don't know. Look, he had some good moments, but Keontae George was really, 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 really bloody good. And if we sort of think about our all-rookie teams that we talked about for most of this season, yeah, it's like I think we had Keontae George on it and we were feeling pretty good about it. Apparently not. Just brutal, mate. Brutal. Anyway, good times, great memories. There are your two all-NBA rookie teams. Amen Thompson outstripping Orsar Thompson, who had a really, really good start to the season. Amen came along like the absolute clappers. Cason Wallace is an interesting one for the second team voting as well, I feel. Ended up with two first place votes, which is pretty crazy. 63 second place and 67 third place vote, total points. So, bit of an interesting one. But who voted Scoot the one spot and the second team is just bonkers to me. I love that. Or on the first team is that? That's funny as. Because that's first place votes. someone just looked at the draft from last year and went, oh, yeah, probably Scoot. Probably like 10 tins deep. And you're like, oh, I've got to put in my votes, bro, for all rookie. I tell you what, Adam Silver, your mate Jim would take it seriously. All right, that's about all the news, right? So all the wash out of the Game 7s from yesterday is Jalen Brunson basically saying, yeah, look, the season's a disappointment. It doesn't matter that we got really far despite being banged up. We didn't win. And that's why everyone loves Jalen Brunson, because that's an awesome approach to have. And outside of that, it was like, even Jamal Murray, he's just like, yeah, look, it was a bit of a rough one. I should have been better. And he was just kind of like, yeah, this sort of sucked, I'll tell you what. And outside of that, the coolest sort of thing that people have dug into is that Rudy Gobert, Ze Staffelteur, is the only player on one of the 15 highest paid contracts in the entire NBA who actually made the Western Conference Finals. Which kind of makes sense when you think about Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert, two very big contracts, obviously. Cat will have another big one coming down the pipe. You have Ant-Man on a rookie contract, of course. And then on the flip side, you've got Luka and Kyrie. Kyrie on a pretty team-friendly extension and initial contract as well. And you've got Luka still signed to his rookie extension outside of that, so the first big one that he had. And then if you look out the East, it's like, yeah, Tatum and Brown. Brown right there, basically out there making an absolute crap ton of money. It's because that doesn't kick until next year. So fun times, enjoying it a lot. Let's bloody go. Funny times. Funny times. Basically, if you think about Steph Curry, Joel Embiid, LeBron, Jokic, Brad Beal, yeah, they didn't make the list. Incredible. All right, should we do some conference finals previews? Previews, previews. I think we should. Because that's what we're here for, isn't it? Boston Indy starts tomorrow. You have the one-seeded Boston Celtics up against the six-seeded Indiana Pacers. A fascinating setup. Why is that, Jim? Well, look, Boston have a tendency to just crap the bed every so often, right? So right off the bat, in terms of like building into your series predictions, like do you give Indy an instant win at some point in the series based off the simple fact that Boston will collectively crap down their pants and miss every three they take and panic? Yes. Yes, you should, because why is that? They've done it the first two rounds. This is also an offense that's better than any they've already played. Like you had that horrible, horrible, like combination of what Miami in the first round and then like the way that Boston have played so far, like the way that they dominated Cleveland, like the Cleveland offense never ever sort of clicked either. They had Donnie Mitchell missing most of that. Yeah, go the fro Jared Allen. They've basically had this like easy schedule all the way through. And now they come up against an Indiana Pacers team that just dropped 130 on the New York Knickerbockers of New York City in MSG in a Game 7. Of course, the Knicks were basically out there rolling out the under-14 East Keel or mixed netball team at the end of the series, but at the same time. This is a different beast because the Pacers were the number one. They are the top-ranked offense in the playoffs, and they were the second, I think, best offense in the NBA this season in terms of offensive rating. Number one was Boston. So, interesting. They are the 13th ranked playoff defense, however, out of the only 16 teams that make the playoffs. So, that might be looked at as a bit of a problem for the Pacers. But for the regular season, they were 24th in defense. So, this sort of tracks, right? The thing is, you just sort of got to look at it and go, Indiana's defense, how does it match up against this Boston Celtics team? And throughout the season, like if you think about like their matchups all the year, earlier in November, the Celtics did ring up 155 on the Pacers. But then in December, the Pacers beat them 122-112. Celtics turned around 118-101. And then that absolute cracking 133-131 game that the Celtics won. And then the Celtics won again, 129-124. So pretty crazy season series, which included the play-in, well, the in-season tournament quarterfinals where the Pacers just blew the doors off them, right? And that 122-112 win. But yeah, there hasn't been a giant amount of defense played in the series so far today. So that's because Boston were the top-ranked offensive team in the NBA this season and the second-best defensive team. So if they just get into a bit of a shootout, they go, right, we'll just outscore them. And Indy's like, that's our entire reason to try. What are we doing? For the postseason, Boston have been the top, they're the second-best offense behind Indy, and they are a top-three defense, however. So you just got to look at this and go, does Boston's defense show up enough and early enough in this series to really take care of the Pacers? I think they do. You've got the Tatum-Brown combo, which when you look up the when you look at the matchups, right, and this is sort of the sort of vibe for this one of the Celtics starting five versus the Pacers starting five. You look at that Celtics one and you feel like they match up really, really well, both defensively and offensively against the Pacers. And I guess in the season series, we saw that borne out, right? Where the Celtics did blow the doors off them a couple of times. But still, I mean, 3-2 for the season series, including the in-season tournament win. Pretty interesting. But if you look at the Celtics starting five and you go Jrue Holiday, Derek White, there's probably not a better backcourt in the entire NBA to deal with, or at least try to deal with Tyrese Halliburton and Andrew Nembhard, basically, right? Who they sort of play at off guard, alternating with Halliburton, where Halliburton is just like, hey, I'm more than happy to move the ball onto the, like, in a very Steph Curry-esque kind of way, right? Which is pretty incredible why Halliburton has such a huge amount of assists, is that he's like more than happy to sort of hand off the ball quickly and then get it back as an off-ball cutter and stuff like that, hitting those baselines as a trailer, etc. He and Nembhard work really well together, but Jrue Holiday and Derek White, it's like, well, you better be awesome because if not, you're going to get cooked. Then you got Brown and Tatum, and you're like, oh, that's a pretty good sort of other wing combo as well against the Pacers wing combo that has Aaron Naismith up against his old team. Revenge, possibly. Obi Toppin and Pascal Siakam on that sort of rotation, right? Obi Toppin, going to get cooked, you'd think. Siakam, interesting matchup against Tatum and co. And then you have like Al Horford versus Miles Turner. Possibly the extreme Zingameal at some point.
Extreme Zingameal.
Possibly, but we just don't know. You know that the Celtics would be like, if we can avoid playing the extreme Zingameal and go up 2-0 in this series, we don't have to bring him back for game 3. We can rest him a little bit longer, maybe game 4, possibly game 5, or we can steal 1 or 2 in Indy, whatever. You just look at this and go, yeah, Boston match up really, really, really well against the Pacers as long as they're defensively accountable and like Brown and Tatum just don't go into just, I'm the hero. No, I'm the hero. No, I want to be the hero. ISO ball offense, which has happened time and time again. But we think about Boston and we go, oh, yeah, remember how they got smashed like in game 2 in both those series? Yeah. The stuff didn't fall, and then they smashed the teams in the remaining 4 games of those series. So I want to give the Pacers a little bit of credit. I know I said the other day what I hate commentators is actually giving teams credit, but you have to like at least acknowledge that the Pacers offense is absolutely turbocharged. Bringing in TJ McConnell, a.k.a. Peyton Pritchard on roids off the bench, Ben Shepherd, Deadeye Ben Shepherd, Obi Toppin, Isaiah Jackson, like they are kind of deep. They don't probably have that top-end talent of the Celtics, but they do have just a bunch of dudes, whereas the Celtics bench is like the White Brigade. Peyton Pritchard, Hauser, and Cornette, right? So it gets pretty tricky. I think the Pacers can get 2 games in this series, but I think it's going to be 5 or 5 or 6 Boston, I think. I'm leaning 4-2 just to be a little bit like give a nod to the Pacers offense. But I think they can get this done in 5. So let's say 4-2 Boston, but probably 4-1. You know, they're wildly, wildly, massively favorited, and so they should be. They're the one seed. They've had like a week off. Indy's just been in an absolute dogfight with the Knicks. And the biggest reason to think about going 4-1 is probably because the Pacers took 7 games to put away a Knicks team that was basically Jalen Brunson and 2 of his college buddies. Like, that's what it was. That's what the Knicks team was. Jalen Brunson turning into Bernard King and 2 of his college buddies just going, oh, I reckon we'll have a crack at the Pacers. What do you reckon? And you're like, geez, that doesn't seem like a full team. And Tibbs just screaming out. The only other thing is to keep in mind is the Boston Celtics, their home record over the last 3 years is 16-14. So they probably will crap their bed at once at home. But at the same time, if they can win both game 1 and 2, you know, you just know that in the back of their mind, if they split possibly to go 2-2 and Indy win both of their home games, going back for game 5 is not going to be the world's easiest proposition for Boston. So they would just want to hopefully avoid that. But either way, look, I still think the way that I've sort of just explained this, I think the Pacers offense is, it deserves to be acknowledged that it's very, very, very good. At the same time, it took a lot to get going against the Knicks team that's not as good as Boston. So let's say Boston 4-1, shall we? And then we're going out west. Look, to be honest, I feel like, to reverse it just a little bit, 4-2 or 4-1, you're happy either way, right, if you're a Boston fan. Anyway, out west, Minnesota, the 3 seed versus the 5 seeded Dallas Mavericks, the Aussies. Let's go, the Aussies. Minnesota were the best defense this regular season in terms of defensive rating. They were the 17th offense. They are the 4th on defense and 6th on offense during these playoffs in terms of the offensive and defensive rating. Dallas were 18th on D, 8th in offense. In the playoffs, it's a little bit closer. 6th on D because they've sort of basically coalesced that defense, obviously, since the All-Star break, since the trade deadline. Lively's come along in leaps and bounds, but having that combination of Lively and Gafford, obviously bringing in PJ Hamilton Washington, playing Derek Jones Jr. and is going, hey, Derek Jones Jr., we know that you've got athleticism to jump out of the bloody gym. Can you actually just put that into hitting some corner threes, catching lobs from Luka and playing defense? He's like, sure. You know, that's not a bad idea. Maybe I will. And off he goes. So they're the 6th defense so far in the playoffs. They're the 7th offense. And it feels like Luka's had like a really scratchy playoff so far, right? He's had some incredible highs. Kyrie might be the most interesting story to come out of that second round, right? Because he did approximately sweet FA for over half that 6-game series. And he did just enough in game 6 to get them over the hump. If he no-shows this game, this series against Minnesota, Dallas are going to get absolutely steamrolled. You can only rely on PJ Hamilton Washington for a few games, as we saw in that series. He was awesome first 3 games, games 4 and 5, pops up again in the second half of game 6. So he basically splits that series down the middle just in favor of him with an extra good half. Three games and a half versus 2.5 games of bad. So the big question, if you look at the matchups as well, Minnesota, they've obviously got the size. You've got Rudy Gobert, you've got Karl Anthony Towns, and the Mavs are going to try to combat that by going, well, if you're going to play cat at the 4, what we've got is PJ Hamilton Washington playing a little bit small. He can keep up with you. You might be able to shoot over him a little bit, but he's not that much smaller, right? He's long, he's lengthy, he works his ass off. You got Derek Jones Jr., Jaden McDaniels, you've got Luka and Kyrie, and then you've got opposite them a couple of dudes named Mike Conley Jr. and Anthony Ant-Man Edwards. It's a really, really fun setup. Like Gafford slash Lively, right, versus Rudy Gobert. It's like just beanpole territory, which is kind of cool. It's kind of fun. The big question for me is what they do about Luka on defense. Like, do they just throw like Jaden McDaniels on him and go, fucking skitch him? Or do you just throw Ant-Man on him and go, get him, Ant-Man? And he's like, rawr! I'd probably prefer the latter, but you probably lean on Jaden McDaniels. He's got the size. He's got the length. Does he have the speed? Does he have the defensive nous? That's a big question too. And then Kyrie versus Mike Conley Jr. So the smaller point guard guys, it's like a, I don't know, it feels like they've been battling for a million years, even though they've probably not played that many actual like series ever in the history of their careers. So it just, they've been around forever. So it makes sense to have them go up against each other. So it feels like in terms of the lineups, it's sort of a weird mishmash where the balance is, look, our bigs for Minnesota, Karl Anthony Towns is filling himself. Everyone's getting around him. They love him all of a sudden. It's like, ha-ha, how funny is Karl Anthony Towns taking the piss out of like reporters going, how much do you want us to lose? And you're like, oh, yeah, forget how weird Kat's voice is sometimes. Anyway, I've basically ended up settling, I think, on Dallas 4-3. Dallas in seven. It's because I think across the course of a series, you can just take Kat out of the equation on offense, and he's just begging for it. The way that this Dallas defense is sort of built, with the sort of in-and-out replacement theory of Gafford and Lively, and then having PJ Hamilton, Washington sort of come on, you've got the bigger wings, obviously, in Josh Greeny Green, and even Dante Exum there in point guard. Hopefully he gets a bit of a run out there as well. Because that Minnesota bench, it's like, that's probably a really big advantage because Naz Reid is absolutely, the sixth man of the year, Naz Reid is pretty bloody unreal. Minnesota have like a random, like little bit of an advantage there. The question's going to be like, all right, well, how do they utilize it? Can they utilize it? What do the Mavs do to combat it? Because if you think about that Mavs bench and sort of bringing size off it, they're much more sort of concerned with like the Tim Hardaway, Josh Green types of the world, right? Because Maxi Kleber is hurt and like Dwight Powell died in a grease fire, I'm pretty sure. So it's going to be like a lot of Josh Greeny Green trying to play up against Naz Reid and co with the Derek Jones Jr., PJ Hamilton, Washington type. So there's a little bit of an advantage there, I dare say, with the Wolves. But by the same token, like the Wolves, outside of Naz Reid, that bench can be very, very, very hit and miss themselves, right? Because you've got Nicky Alexander-Walker, who's been really good defensively, then went 0-6 in Game 7. Monty Morris, slow-mo Kyle Anderson, who will probably break some Mavs hearts. But throughout the season, the Wolves won this season series 3-1, right? So they beat them 119-101 back in December. Just before New Year's, they beat them 118-110. Then the Mavs beat them 115-108 early January, and then the start of February, 121-87. They kicked the absolute bejesus out of them. So it's going to be very, very tough, I think, for the Mavs to sort of reverse that 3-1 series stuff, but I think they can do it just because down the stretch, you've still got Luka, you've still got Kyrie, you've got shot makers, you've got shot takers, and I think they can get the job done. I think it'll take them bloody forever to do so against this awesome defense. But sometimes just that top-end offensive talent might just win through. As long as, like, Ant-Man might go off. You get that. As long as you can sort of contain the likes of Kat. Don't, like, let Nicky Alexander-Walker and Conley hurt you too much. Jaden McDaniels had two really, really good offensive games to finish off that Nuggets series as well. So you got to keep an eye on him. But it's like, all right, cool. We've got some wing defenders that we can throw at Ant-Man if we need to. We can try to slow down Kat. If they can do that enough during this series, I think they can win it. So I'm going to tip Dallas 4-3 because that's, I just want to see the Australians in the finals. Simple as that. All right, good stuff. There's a couple of it. So I'm taking Dallas 4-3, Boston, we're going to say 4-2, 4-1, probably 4-1. Fascinating setup though there. So am I now tipping? I think I mentioned the other day I was like leaning towards Minnesota that on yesterday's show. The more I've thought about it, the more I sort of like Dallas to pull off the upset. You know, either way, it's going to be unreal because at some point when this is all said and done, like Jason Tatum, Tyrese Halliburton, Anthony Edwards, or Luka Doncic are going to have their first ring once this is all said and done. What a world. All right, let's take a quick chat, take a break, and then come back with our big chat with Damon Lowry right after, let's say, I don't know, this.
This is Cam Glidden.
This is Anthony Drimmick.
This is Mitch McCarron.
This is Jason Kadee.
This is Daryl McDonald.
Hey guys, this is Hugh Greenwood.
Yo, what's going on? This is Ellie.
This is Mark Worthington, or commonly known as Wurtho, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
All right. We now welcome on a very special guest. Why is he special, you might ask? There's many a reason. He's an NBL champion, NBL commentator. He's the scourge of Adelaide, I'll tell you that much. But most importantly, he's actually a Ballarat minor legend. And I grew up watching him. It's Damon Lowry. What is going on, Damon? This is awesome.
Big fella. What's going on, man?
I will tell you what, this is an absolute treat for me. As a kid growing up in Ballarat, I watched you, Eric Hayes, who actually ended up becoming my PE teacher, a bunch of the other miners legends coached by Brendan Joyce and co. It was fantastic to see all that success. I mean, can we start there? What the hell was it like playing basketball in Country Victoria for Damon Lowry in the mid-90s, early mid-90s?
First of all, thank you for the intro. Thank you for having me on. How far down the list was I to get on this show? That's okay. Don't tell me. But you did leave out the fact that I'm an Olympian, but we can talk about that later. But to your question, what's it like to play for the Ballarat Miners?
Yeah.
Is that the question?
Basically.
1994 it was. Actually, let me take you back to the end of 93 NBL 1 season, which was then called Siebel. I was playing for the Mildura Mavericks. My wife and I moved to Melbourne. I don't have a game. I'm ringing around all these Siebel teams. Everybody's already got the import spots filled. Buddy of mine calls me and says, look, I'm playing for the Altona Gators in the VBA on a Wednesday night. I'm not going back. You can take my spot. I ring up the coach. Mick Downing is his name. I drive down to Altona for a tryout. He picks me in the team. So we're playing Wednesday night, the good old days, VBA, playing against NBL teams, Big V teams. You know how it was in the VBA days. So anyway, we playing the Ballarat Miners one day. Eric Cooks had broke his hand. So Ballarat beat us by about 20, but I had a decent game. By the time I get home, there's a message on the answering machine. Remember answering machines?
Yes.
Brendan Joyce left a message on his answering machine to give him a call. Rest is history.
That's awesome. I mean, all I remember from the time is like being quite small, but also freezing my ass off up in like the stands of the Minor Dome. And it was absolute chaos because the team was fucking awesome and like kept kicking ass and being really, really good. And, pretty good when you're just having like this weird sort of amazing succession of coaches from like Gorge to Westover to Brendan. Like, what was it like actually playing in Ballarat for you? Were you just like, well, fucking hell, like you were like Horsham as well, right? Like Horsham, Mildura, Altona, and then like Ballarat in the mid-90s. The place would actually, get fairly rocking. And like, did you sort of think about it being as a stepping stone to the NBL eventually?
At that stage, I think I knew I wasn't going to play NBL at that stage because back then imports weren't transitioning to the NBL. Once you was playing in the Siebel, it was called the CBA when I was playing for the Mildura Mavericks. Then it's changed its name that many times, CBA, ABA. Once you was already, I felt, labeled as a second-tier import, there was no way NBL was going to give you a shot. We had to naturalize. I remember Kelvin Henderson played in Adelaide back in the day, and he naturalized, and Kelvin Henderson actually went to court and said, I could be the Prime Minister of Australia, but you mean to tell me I can't play in NBL as an import? I mean, as a local? So going to Ballarat, I was living in Camberwell at the time. So I drove an hour and a half every Tuesday and Thursday for training. And on Wednesday, VBA, if it was in Melbourne, I would stay down in Melbourne, obviously. If it was in Ballarat, I had to go down there. On the weekend, they put me up in the Western Hotel on the weekends. But they already had a good team, but they couldn't get over the hump. Eric Hayes, Eric Cooks, Paul Hotchin, Grant Keys, Matt Campbell, just couldn't get over the hump. So we was one of the few teams, once Eric Cooks naturalized, we actually won. Brendan brought me in to play four games. My contract was for four games. And when Eric Cooks comes back, that's it. I was like, no problem. So four games, I played it. We won all four. He says, all right. I said, thanks, man. See you later. He goes, hey, have they spoken to you? I I said, nah. He says, come back next week. Cookie's naturalized. So Cookie comes back. So now we wanted a few teams with three Americans. And we ran the table. 16 straight wins. And we won the national championship. And that was the first year they ever went national with a championship.
That is awesome. It was a high time, I'll tell you that much. And then, so obviously most of our listeners will like know you from the Illawarra Wollongong days. And as I said, like the scourge of Adelaide, Darnell. Like how many times do people bring up the Darnell Mee free throws end of the game in the, was the semis as well, wasn't it? Look, like, does that happen still often?
It's been so long ago that it doesn't come up. Every now and then, it's so rare. Me and Darnell, we ended up being teammates in 04 in Wollongong. And really good friends. He'd come to my house and see my big old frame up, me shooting the free throws. The first thing he said when he walked in the house, man, take that shit down. You know you didn't get fouled. Hey, here's a little a tidbit you might want to know. Darnell Mee's son, Mikhail Mee, who was about 3 years old when I was in Wollongong, is now playing for Rupert Sapwell. He just got here in Adelaide. He's playing NBL1, the next generation of the Mees. He's about 6'6".
That's sweet. I mean, those Wollongong years, I mean, what was that like to actually win the title? It's one of those amazing sort of stories as well, right? Like that team is absolutely beloved as well by like that sort of community, those fans, like forever and ever. That's like etched into history, right?
When you play in a regional town, it's bigger than basketball. Whereas you can win a championship in Sydney and you'll be beloved in Sydney and Melbourne, all those major cities, but in the community itself, maybe not as much. Well, if you win one in Adelaide, you win one in Wollongong, Townsville, some regional towns like that, the whole city gets behind you. And obviously the Hawks had never won a championship before, so that was just a magical run we had. I mean, we just had a team full of just hardworking dudes, coached by a hardworking coach. That team embodied what Wollongong was as a city, which it still is. And things just fell into place. I would say it was luck, but we won about 10 to 12 games by less than 4 points. So it wasn't luck. We knew what we were doing, and we was well coached. Didn't have any individual egos, no alpha dogs like that. We had like a team identity, a team ego. And it was a magical run, man. And like, I can still remember them celebrations. And I wanted it to go all day. Actually, on day 16, after we win it, I declared a 30-day national celebration. Sure. And when I walked out of the house on day 16, my wife looked at me and said, if you walk out that house, we're done. I was like, what are you talking about? I got 2 weeks to go.
That's awesome. I mean, to be honest, you've earned it, right? Like 30 days feels actually not that bad considering you've just gone through the grind of an NBL season and won the damn thing, right? Like, I feel like that's fair, but at the same time, you can do a lot of damage in 16 days.
Now I'm flat out going 2 days in a row. It's hard to bag it up these days.
Tell me about it. I'm way too old. But I mean, actually sticking with that, I mean, obviously Justin Tatum takes over the Hawks this year and everything. Like over the years, obviously as your role in media and stuff has grown and grown and grown, you've watched Illawarra sort of go through the ups and downs, obviously. They've had a lot. Is it hard to sort of separate yourself from it and have like all those memories and sort of like, not almost get like too personally attached to it?
That's a good question. A major chunk of my basketball, I guess, if you will, identity is based on that. I was only there for 4 years, but in them 4 years, like I said, it was magical. And like everybody remembers the team that won it for the first time. So of course it's going to always have a place in my heart, the city. I mean, my kids went to school there. I was in the community. So, yeah, Fig Tree, the west side of Wollongong. And my buddy Matt Campbell, championship teammate, is running the joint. So, you know, of course, there's always a connection there. Glenn Saville's still in town. Luke Doherty's still in town. It feels like home whenever I go there. But when it's time to commentate and call games, I don't care who wins. But if they get to the grand final, I'm going to care who wins. I call it like I see it regardless, and I'll be the first one to call up Matt Campbell and leave him a message going, what the hell was that?
Nice.
Yeah, you know, you got to put something better together. But Justin Tatum is the right guy for that town. That town needs a certain kind of a coach, a down-to-earth, pull no punches, a guy that you can relate to, not some guy that kind of breezes in, breezes out like a, you know. I thought Gorgian was great for the town because he is just such a – he coached in Ballarat Gorge, and he's a people dude. A people guy is best for that kind of town. Rob Beveridge I thought was great too. They got a lot of good coaches after Brendan. So now they just got to get over the line and take all this pressure off the 0-1 team because we've been carrying this weight for 23 years now.
Damn straight. So as I mentioned, right, the NBL, your media presence and like the commentary and everything has grown. This year as well, I feel like you were absolutely bang on about a bunch of stuff, obviously, like when it comes to, as I keep talking about, like Adelaide and stuff like that. But you were bang on about the Tatum gear as well. What was your favorite moment from this season? I feel like this is like one of the more, I don't know, one of the sort of more just, there was a narrative each week that you could sort of build into, that you could feed from. And it felt like there was a lot of drama, a lot of ups and downs. And then we get to the point where it's like the grand final and you have like just an absolutely chaotic final series, an incredible playoff run as well. We just had Cam Glidden on Friday's show, just even talking about that Breakers run, right? Like that entire stuff was incredible. I feel like from the start of the season through the end, it was nuts. What was your favorite moment?
Man, that's way too many, but NBL 24 was off the rails. I don't know when it started. I can't remember which week when everything just got wild, but it just kept that whole wild momentum flow going out throughout the rest of the season. It culminated in one of the best grand final series. I'm gonna probably say it's the best grand final series since the 40-minute era that I've ever seen. Big shot, big man, Jack McVay hitting the big game, big shots. Moments like the level of talent across the league is just phenomenal. And I was a champion for all the little dudes. For Jordan over there in Tassie, Jordan Crawford, Pierre, Parker Jackson Cartwright, even Gary Brown Jr. when he was before he went off the rails and started punching people. I just loved the return of the little dude. So that was a highlight for me. But every game, you just had no idea what was going to happen. And that's how it should be. I mean, great parity. The league, it could have been won by anybody. The coach of the year was wide open. The MVP, maybe not as much, was wide open because that was always going to be Bryce's. But just the sheer level of talent. But so many, you know, buzzer-beating games, overtime games, big game moments by big game players. I don't know how NBL 25 is going to top it, but I hope it's ready.
Damn straight. And digging in, I mean, so as well, like we've talked about some of the great moments, whatever. One thing I do love just sort of digging into with our former players is who was like the one person that you sort of played against sort of before you actually got to the NBL where you sort of saw them play and you're like, shit, if you got a crack, you would make it and you would stick and you'd be really good. Like similar to yourself, right? Like where you actually got a crack, you stuck, you were awesome. Were there any other ones that sort of fell through the cracks that you remember?
Oh, man, too many. And this ain't no disrespect to any current NBL dudes, but like there's a lot of guys in the NBL 1 now that when I was playing, I felt gave me more trouble than a lot of the NBL dudes. For example, like I was the shortest in the league, so they tell me, although I could have swore I was taller than a couple people. But everybody gets picked up. Like the point guards, I'm getting picked up full court. I remember playing against Brad Robbins when he was in Knox. Brad Robbins went on to have a distinguished, glorified career. And Brad was just a regular dude. Okay, he was young, but like it was hell in my size because every Australian guard was my size. And they picking me up full court. I get to the NBL. I'm like, where's everybody? I can just bring the ball up the floor. This is cool. No pressure. But guys like we talked about, your former teacher, Eric Hayes. Never got one of the best athletes, ideal two guard in his younger days. Eric Cooks, who eventually made it to the NBL, but got there when he was old, and he was still good. I can name so many important men. Randy Anderson from Broad Meadows, Maurice Cowan from Broad Meadows, Mike Kelly eventually got a shot. When Mike Kelly made it, We all felt like we made it because Mike was one of us. He was playing in Northeast Melbourne Arrows. Jerome Lee was one, probably the best point guard to play Siebel for 10 years. Guys, just like I said, they never got a shot because once you played NBL1 or at Siebel, you're labeled. That's what I think anyway. So they make you naturalize these days. And now, even now, it's hard to get, you know, the naturalized. Like Bryce Cotton can't get his citizenship. Hang on a sec. Sorry about that. Yeah, so plenty of talent, man, across the board, imports wise, and even Australians. So we need, that's why we need more teams in the NBL. We need more teams, man, because the talent is out there.
Love it. Really quickly, who was your favorite teammate?
Man, come on, man. Favorite teammate? Jeez, way too many. You know how many teammates I've had when you've played over 25 years?
The best part, you got to put one up on the pedestal, right? This is how it works, Damon. You go, this is my guy. I will stand here and say he was my favorite. And then you got to deal with the consequences. It's the best part. Because you got, what are you talking about? Come on, man.
I can give you an all-star five of teammates, and that would be doing a bunch of dudes disservice. I played too long. Glenn Saville, great teammate. Just a phenomenal teammate. Eric Cooks. I'm just going to go. Can I go NBL1 too?
Sure.
NBL1. Eric Cooks, Eric Hayes, Mick Wheeler, who played at Dandenong and then actually got a game in the Brisbane Bullets. He was shorter than me. Grant Keyes, great teammate. Grant Kruger, NBL, great teammate. Used to work out with Grant. He's my weights partner. Cortez Groves, my man. Charles Thompson. Look, man.
Now we're just naming dudes. This is great.
I'm just naming dudes now. Just too many.
I'm all about just naming dudes. That's awesome. Right, Damon, we've got the NBA Conference Finals happening as well, basically from Wednesday. We've got the Celtics and the Pacers. And then we've got, Dallas and the Minnesota Timberwolves who beat the reigning champs, Denver, yesterday. Do you have any tips, vibes, picks for Boston, Indy, and then Dallas and Minnesota?
Yeah, I'm looking at Boston to get through. I think they'll beat the Pacers. The West, I'm torn, obviously, because Anthony Edwards is, as much as there's a lot to dislike about the NBA with some of these knuckleheads, these prima donnas that just give me the shits, I can't find anything to dislike about Anthony Edwards. Can't find nothing to dislike about that dude. Love the way he go about it. So to see him get to a finals would be awesome. But I ain't going to pass on man Dante Exum and Josh Green. I ain't going to pass the Dallas Mavericks. So I want the Dallas Mavericks to win the whole thing. Been friends with Dante and his family for so long. Shout out late great Cecil Exum, his mother Desiree, his brother and sister. I'm all in on Exum. I don't care if he don't play more than 2 minutes a game in the finals. I don't care. Obviously, they shorten the rotations, which always happens. But Dante's had a great season this year. Couldn't be happier for him.
Yeah, they put Jaden Hardy in for a little bit of offensive firepower right towards the end of the series. And at the same time, you're kind of like, I don't know. I still feel like you guys need a little bit more defense. You're killing me. But either way, look, Damon, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for jumping on NBA Australia. But before we go, as you said, Parisian Olympian vibes with the 3x3, the Gangaroos. Take us through it. Come on.
The Gangaroos, man. The Australian 3x3 women's. We just qualified. We just got back from Japan. Olympic qualifier. There was three Olympic qualifiers. We could only go to one. And we had to win the whole thing. Backs against the wall. Had to beat Canada, who's an international powerhouse. Not once. We had to beat them twice. And my girls, Alex Wilson, is a gangster of the highest order. She's playing WNBL for the Bendigo Spirit. Lauren Mansfield, arguably one of the smartest people, male or female, I have ever been around. The girl was born to be a point guard. She's played Adelaide Lightning last year. Don't know where she's a free agent right now. Marina Whittle is a walk-in bucket. Just a walk-in bucket. Can score. She's a prototype for a 3x3 player. She has played in Spain, in Madrid. And then Annalie Maley, who's the equivalent of three people out there on the floor with her work ethic. Amazing. And them four girls come together. No individual egos. Those girls genuinely love playing with each other. This ain't cliche when they get happy when the other person goes off. It's such a great vibe, man. So now They've realized their childhood dream. It's never been my dream to be an Olympian because I knew I was never good enough. But now here I am. So I've been called lots of things in my life, but you're going to have to call me an Olympian from here on out. So yeah, so we head over to Paris and we're going to try to come back with a medal.
I love it. You guys and the Boomers, let's get medals everywhere across this basketball spectrum. I reckon we can do it. Let's do it.
Boomers, Opals, the Rollers, like the Glide, everybody. Anybody wearing the green and gold, let's come back with some hardware.
Awesome. All right. Thanks so much for jumping on, Damon. Appreciate it, mate.
No worries, man.
This is Matthew Dellavedova, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right. Let's do a quick Patty Mills game day, Bulldog game day Twitter check-in before we preview tomorrow's games. But before we do that, how good is Damon Lowry just to chat to? That was awesome. What a legend. I enjoy him a lot. Just some absolute Ballarat vibes, right? Full blown. I swear, like, that 1995 title they won is still etched in my young brain as, like, one of the greatest basketball teams ever assembled. I loved it. All right, let's quickly find a bit of Patty Mills and see what he's been up to. Because we're going to keep a pace with his workout, weren't we? Week one. All right, we're up to... All right, Monday is lift, mobility, recovery, and treatment. Did we do that yesterday? No, but we will try to do it today. Tuesday is lift and recovery. All right, sweet. Are we on board? You bloody well better be. So yeah, today, we're going to catch up to yesterday's, which is lift, mobility, recovery, and treatment. All right, so we're going to do a bit of lift. We're going to do a little bit of mobility, then recovery and treatment, which might involve me going to the pub. I might have to start this tomorrow. I'm already a couple of days behind. Sorry, Patty. I don't want to let you down. But let's do some game previews.
Game previews.
Thanks, Inadvertent Bane.
Not a problem, Jim. How's it all going?
Yeah, not bad. Just sort of wish I knew what I was meant to be doing today. Chaos at work, seemingly. Right, Pacers, Celtics. I went with the Celtics yesterday at -9.5, and I'm still sitting with that at the moment. I think they can... I think the Pacers would be looking at this going, oh, man, look, Boston, after, like, what we just dealt with the Knicks and that suffocating defense, and Boston just go out there and give the old whap-bang, slap him around a little bit. So I like the Celtics -9.5 for that line. I think they can put up, you know, that 122-odd easily, I think, and probably it's that very similar, like, a reverse that in-season tournament result, 122-112, and they cover that 9.5. Naismith against his old team is worth keeping an eye on. Because he's also the one matchup where they're just like, ah, oh, JB, do you want to have a crack? And he's like, ah, oh, I'm a bit bored. Naismith goes off. I'd probably stick on Halliburton unders and stuff like that just until he gets his feet under him in this Eastern Conference Finals, because I think trying to go up against Derek White and Jrue Holiday is just, oh, going to be absolutely fraught. Derek White, though, I think on the flip side for the Celtics, he's the sort of dude where you like could get off the chain a little bit. And especially against like Halliburton and Nembhard and co. Tatum, I think in the last meeting, Tatum had like 30-odd. Siakam had 23. Naismith dropped 26, which is still funny. Halliburton shot 5 of 16, but he was carrying a lot more injury. And that's right, Derek White hit 4 threes. He had 24. So that's sort of the weird thing. Tatum, Brown, and White just become a really hard matchup for the Pacers. So I think they can run roughshod over him again. 3-2 in the season series. I think they win game one. I'm going to take the -9.5 as well. And there you go. We'll wrap up that game tomorrow on tomorrow's show. And we'll preview game one of Minnesota-Dallas tomorrow as well. Because we've got one game a day. How good is that? The answer is very good. So that's it for today. How good was that? Nice little surprise NBA Australia for you. Massive thanks to Damon Lowry for jumping on the show. That was just, I'll tell you what, absolute treat. Like, sometimes I just sort of shake my head. Like, Gazy coming on for episode 1000. Hammer, Jingles and co. Like, just sometimes I'm just like even just like hanging out with Deli, like, I just fucking love it. Our man Chris Anstey just like came glittering on Friday. I fucking love doing this. It's great fun. All right. Either way, we'll be back on deck tomorrow. Thanks to Damon Lowry. In the meantime, make sure you're following NBA Australia on Twitter, Face the IG. We're all over the socials. Get around the AFL Today show. It is smashing at the moment. I mean, yes, I was laughed at by everybody in Perth for tipping Melbourne to beat West Coast pretty handily, and West Coast beating them, but whatever. That's for the AFL show and not for the NBA one. Either way, get around NFL Australia as well. Myself and Gaz, you've got the Cricket Today podcast. Those guys are doing great. The Football Today one for all your soccer needs, and Hold All Tickets for all your GG stuff. Check a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, whatever app you use on your Android phone. It does help out heaps, so please get around them all. NBAAustralia.com/shop. Get your merch. Get your merch. Big thanks go to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Check out House Hats, Joshua De Laurentiis, Fascinator, Gold Mines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa Sextodite, Green, and Dozers. For all the tunes you hear throughout the show, give them a smash on Bandcamp, Triple J on Earth, Facey, Apple Music, Spotify. However you follow along with your bands, do that. NBA Australia Sports Australian bands, so should you. I'm going to Hold Steady 3 nights this week. It's going to be awesome. So if you're a Hold Steady fan, look out for the chunky ginger bloke with the big red beard. That will likely be me. But at the same time, it's a Hold Steady shot, so it could be about 8 other dudes as well. I'm not fooling either. All right, that'll do us for today because I've got to run. I was going to do a deli review, but we might hold that one on to tomorrow. So, all right, we'll catch you then, you dickheads. The conference finals are here. Are you excited? You should bloody well better be because I am. All right, this is NBA Australia saying look after yourselves, would you? And later, Hosanna.
Drink Sprite?